Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I am truly honored to share the microphone with the most interesting people. These are business leaders who have wonderful stories to share and who are excited to freely share their journeys, their business wisdom, their tips, and their actionable advice. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. In fact, my guests are so compelling and so insightful that this podcast was recently written up on Inc.com as one of the best business podcasts you need to be listening to now, and was also featured on MSNBC. And our topic today, a really important one, the 7 Leadership Styles for Success with Lolly Daskal. Lolly Daskal is one of the most sought after executive leadership coaches in the world. Her extensive cross-cultural expertise spans 14 countries, 6 languages, and hundreds of companies. As founder and CEO of Lead From Within, her proprietary leadership program is engineered to be a catalyst for leaders who want to enhance performance and make a meaningful difference in their companies, their lives, and the world. Based on a mix of modern philosophy, science, and nearly 30 years of coaching top executives, Lolly's perspective on leadership continues to break new ground and produce exceptional results. Of her many awards and accolades, Lolly was designated a Top 50 Leadership and Management Expert by Inc. Magazine, 100 Great Leadership Speakers for Your Next Conference, and Speakers at Your Next Event by Inc. Magazine. I'm not sure I said that right. I'll check with Lolly. Her writing has appeared in HBR, Inc.com, Fast Company, in the Ask as the Expert section, Huffington Post, and Psychology Today, among many others. Her proprietary insights are also the subject of her new book, The Leadership Gap, What Gets Between You and Your Greatness, and is available for pre-order at theleadershipgap.com. I'm sorry, theleadershipgapbook.com. I ordered that about a month ago. So in this episode of Your Partner in Success Radio, we are going to discuss how leaders embody 7 archetypes and how each archetype has powerful abilities and hidden impediments. Good morning, Lolly. I got through it. And welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I'm so glad to have you. And as I mentioned in my introduction, this podcast was written up on Inc. and made the number 2 slot. What I would love to share with our audience today is that you are the author of that article. And I just want to take a moment and tell you how very much I appreciate you.
Absolutely. And it's so well deserved. You deserve I did this article, I think it was a few months ago, maybe 6 or 7
yeah.
months ago. I was looking for the top podcasts that people should be listening to in business, and you were number 2. It was like, this is it. We must write about Denise's show, and it's a true honor to be talking to you. We didn't know each other beforehand, so this is really nice to finally talk to you.
I know. I mean, we've spoken a little bit before, but and of course, I've kind of haunt you. I'm always looking at what you're doing. I'm on your mailing list. I'm a lurker. You know, I follow you on Twitter and Facebook. And yeah, I looked at this book and I looked at what you were doing. And I am honored. I am truly, truly honored. So thank you so much. And I have to tell you, as a result of you writing that article, my podcast has just kind of gone insane. It was doing well before. Now I can barely keep up. So thank you again.
Well deserved. You deserve that, and so it's a true honor to be here.
No, I'm delighted, and you know we had a lot of trouble getting this scheduled. So thankfully we got it worked out, and here we are. So you know sometimes you just have to fight for what you really want, don't you?
Absolutely.
Well, listen, I have got I mean, I can't wait to get your book in my hands. I did pre-order, and I'm really excited about reading that. But what made you write this book? I mean, normally, you know, I don't make this show about a book, but this one I think is so important. We definitely need to talk about it. But what took you down that path? Why did you have to write this book?
It's a great question. I didn't always think I had to write a book, but I knew I wanted to write a book. I didn't know what I was going to write about. And about 2 years ago, I hired an agent and I said, I want to write a proposal about a book. And I created this proposal that had something that said, the 10 most important questions that a business leader must ask. I think it was something like that. And we shopped around the proposal. And everybody was like, this is really interesting. We really like it. Let's do this book. But there was one publisher that said, no, there's a better book within you. There's something that is more important than the 10 questions every business leader should ask them. They said, what have you been doing with clients all these years that make you successful? And I said, oh, I do a rethink system. It's about the 7 leadership archetypes that every leader must be in order to succeed. And they said, that's the book. That's the book we want you to write. And so 2 years later, we have The Leadership Gap, What Gets Between You and Your Greatness.
And I love the title because, honestly, I think what gets between us, and this is just me thinking out loud, is us. I think many, many times the biggest stumbling blocks that are presented to us are the ones of our own making. Am I wrong?
No, you're so spot on. And I want to elaborate on what you're saying that is so brilliant. Denise just hit on something that most people, they don't realize how important this is that when you are a person in business, when you are a leader, when you have responsibility, most of the time you think of taking yourself to the next level and you worry about the hows and the whens and the whats and the wheres. We don't spend the time thinking about the who. We don't spend the time thinking about myself, about the you. And we do a big disservice to ourselves because if we concentrate on the how and the when and the what, we might not be successful because if you don't have yourself right, you can't get your business right. And that's why it's so important about what you just said. You, we get in our own way, but we must learn what means we to stand in our greatness and what means we might be leading from our gaps.
And see, I love that because I've been undergoing kind of a personal epiphany. I'm a very logical, linear thinker. And I'm a techie person. I'm a nerd in stilettos. You know, I love to build websites. I'm a very, very techie person. But it occurred to me that I wasn't taking really good care of my internal thought processes, you know, why I'm doing these things, who I'm doing it for. And I had to do, and I'm continuing to do, some very deep diving on why, what drove me to be an entrepreneur? Why am I doing these things? For me, it's as easy as breathing, but why? And once I started kind of diving deep and looking for those answers, I found that I was better serving my clients and, Lolly, better serving myself, which I really hadn't been doing, surprisingly enough.
So it's interesting what you just mentioned. You went to the question of why, and if I can offer you something, is go one level deeper. Go to the level of who. Who do you want to be in your business? How do you want to, because the who will tell you how you show up with your clients. And that is one level that most people don't go to. The why is where people they think that's their starting point. Why do I want to be this? Why is important, but the why comes from the who.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, can you give our audience any pointers on how to kind of take that deep dive? I'm sure it's in the book, but can you share a bit on why that would be the first step to take?
Absolutely. And it is in the system itself. If you know the 7 leadership, somebody called it the other day, I call them the archetypes, but they call them the who's. If you know the 7 who's, then they stand for virtues. They stand for the character of who you need to be. If you know your virtues and your character, guess what? You'll know how to show up. You'll know your why. You'll know your when and where. So if you're thinking about why are you doing the things you're doing? Go back to the who. And if you don't mind, I'd like to go through some of these who's so people can find themselves and figure out which virtues they're bringing to their business and to their life, and how are they bringing it. Is that okay?
I would love for you to, and I'm scribbling madly.
Okay, so the first thing is to remember is that it's an acronym, and the acronym is RETHINK. Rethink, I called it rethink, it's because most of us spend so much time thinking we know what to do. And my whole thing is that if you want to take yourself to the next level, if you want to dive deeper, you have to rethink what you don't know. And the what you don't know is maybe the who you need to be. And the who you need to be, the first one is R, is the rebel. The rebel is driven by confidence. But if we're not careful, then we can lead from the leadership gap and we can feel like the imposter who's plagued by self-doubt. The second is the E, is the explorer, who everything that they do in their business to make decisions is fueled by intuition. But if they're not careful, they can come from the leadership gap of being the exploiter who ends up manipulating people. The third archetype is the truth teller. And the truth teller is all about telling people the truth, speaking with candor. But if we're not careful and we withhold information from our clients and we tell half-truths, what happens is we might come across with the leadership gap as the deceiver who creates suspicion. And then we have the fourth archetype is the hero. Sometimes we have to be very courageous in our business. We have to be very courageous in our conversations. And if we're not careful, we can lead from the leadership gap of being the bystander. The bystander is fearful. The bystander sees something and hears something, and they do nothing and they say nothing. And as we know, this can cost you in your business. This can cost you in your leadership. And then we have the fifth archetype, which is the inventor. The inventor is all about the craft. How do I do what I do? They do it with integrity. Everything is done with excellence and quality. But if we're not careful and we cut corners and we don't do our best and we don't do our work with quality and integrity, we could come across as a leadership gap, which is a destroyer who's morally corrupt. And then we have the sixth archetype is the navigator. I love the navigator because I think everybody on this call is going to say, that's me, that's me. They really identify with the navigator. And the navigator is someone who's very smart, very practical, is very pragmatic. And people come to them to solve their problems because they're very good at putting pieces of the puzzle together. They're very good at coming up with solutions. And because that is true, people really trust them. But there is a big leadership gap. For every navigator who's trusted, you might come across as the fixer who's arrogant. And the fixer says, oh, you have a problem? This is what you need to do. This is how you need to fix it. And when we jump in to be the fixer, we come across as arrogant and we don't even know we're doing it. And most of the time, it's costing us in having great clients and creating a great business and even having great leadership. And the last archetype is the knight. The knight is not about gender, but it's about the virtue of the knight. The knight is about loyalty. It's about protecting. It's about honoring others. And so if you have a client, you're very loyal to that client. You stand by the client. You protect that client. But then sometimes there's a leadership gap where you lead from being the mercenary who's self-serving, where you only think about yourself, where you go, me, me, me. And we know great leadership is about we. It's not about me. So these are the seven archetypes. These are the seven who's that we have to become. We have to embody these virtues. Otherwise, what will get in the way is our leadership but from our greatness.
I'm scribbling like mad. For rebel, I wrote down imposter syndrome. That's the first thing that came into my head. I don't know why. It just popped into my head. So do you have any examples that you can share, obviously without giving names, but do any great examples come to your thoughts as we're doing this?
Absolutely. And in the book, the way I structured the book so everybody can really find themselves on every single page, I tell an iconic story of someone you might know in history or in business or in science, somebody that you can relate to. But then what I do is I tell you stories about my clients, those who suffer from the imposter syndrome, those who end up exploiting people, and they don't do it because they want to. They do it because they are challenged. They do it because they're stressed. And when you are stressed, overworked, and overwhelmed, we tend to lead from our leadership gap than leading from our greatness. And so in the book, there'll be hundreds of stories where you can find yourself on every page saying, oh, she's talking about me. I go through this. And once you recognize the who, I give you how to leverage it. I give you the how. I give you the why. So you can, it's a complete message when you go through the book. So I'll tell you a little story so it can bring home the message of what I'm trying to say. One of my clients calls himself the truth teller. He resonates with the truth teller archetype. But one thing is that he doesn't realize is that standing on the soapbox of being the truth teller, he's really leading from the gap of being the deceiver who creates suspicion. And I'll explain what's going on in his organization. I think I call him Michael in the book to protect his, his identity, because I really can't say who my clients are. But Michael leads from the aspect of he's always telling everybody, tell me the truth, tell me the truth, tell me the truth. And he badgers people to tell me the truth. Truth is very important to me. And his HR director called me and said, you've got 3 months. You better get that man off his soapbox because it is costing him his leadership. People are leaving him. Top people are leaving the organization. Top talent is leaving the organization. He's alienating people, and nobody wants to work with Michael. Nobody. And so I said, okay, I'll meet with Michael. When I met with Michael, guess what he did? In the first 3 hours of meeting him, all he talked about was telling me how important the truth is to him. And after he was done telling me how important it is, I was very patient. I looked at him and I said, Michael, time in your life that you've told a lie. And he became very quiet. And he looked at me, and Denise, I thought he was going to pounce on me. I was real for a moment because he leaned in and he looked at me with these eyes, and I thought he was going to punch me or something. I didn't know what was going to happen. And I was like, I was quiet. And then he said, yes, I was 18 years old. I told a lie, but I made a promise that if I didn't get caught in the lie, I would spend the rest of my life being all about the truth teller. And so I said to him, that promise has cost you in who you are today, because you're making the truth teller such a big deal is that you're not telling the truth. You're not telling people what has happened in your life and why it's so important. And because you're not telling the whole truth, you are creating a culture of paranoia, a culture of suspicion, and you're coming across as a deceiver. And he says, I am? That's the last thing I want. And so I said, well, I would like for you to do, if you're comfortable, is to call in your leadership team next week and to tell them that story. But first, you have to forgive yourself for what you did when you were 18. You're 56 years old right now. You did something at 18, and then I'm not saying what you did was right. And in the book, I talk about what he did. He tells the story of what he did at 18. But we don't have all that time right now because we're on this call. But I said to him, will you call in your team? And will you tell them what you did when you were 18? And let's see what happened. And he goes, no, I don't want to do that. I can't. I said, let's try it. And so a week passed, he called in his team, and he told his team, and Michael was different. His team reacted with, oh, that's why you do what you do? All of a sudden, people started to feel engaged. People started to feel part of his story. They understood him. They understood where he came from. They were forgiving of what was going on, and they said, now we get it. Now we understand, and now we see why truth is so important. So he didn't realize, Michael didn't realize he was coming across as a deceiver when all he wanted to be was a truth teller. And sometimes what you don't own owns you, and that's what was happening to Michael.
Well, you know, Lolly, when you first started describing what was going on with him, I immediately went to, he's hiding something. He's got deep shame, and he's deeply afraid of something. And turns out I was right. The people, I think what a lot of people don't understand is, you know, most of us have pretty good spidey sense if we pay attention to it. And, you know, he was hiding something and made it very, very apparent by his actions and didn't even know it. How's it working out with him now?
He's an amazing leader. He owns his stuff.
Oh.
It's really great. He had the lowest grade in the Gallup that I have ever seen of employee engagement. And now he has tremendous engagement. He has employees that are loyal to him. They have conversations like they've never had before. There is loyalty. There is trust. There is communication. It's a whole different company.
I have to ask, does he own the company or was he an employee?
He was put in the position of CEO, so he has a board of directors.
See, I'm trying to figure out what they saw in him that was so valuable that they were willing to try to save him. There had to have been something.
Skills. He had the skills. He was very smart. So most of the time when I work with the leader, when I come in to coach someone, they have the competencies, but they don't have the who. They don't have the leadership style right.
Gotcha. Yeah, because in many instances, I could see where they would just say, you know, this isn't working. You got to go. But they saw something that they wanted to salvage and brought you in, which I think is brilliant. So I guess my point is that firing somebody or letting them go or moving them laterally is not always the best thing to do. It's best to sit down and find out why they're doing the things that they're doing and see how they can be helped.
The most important message, well, you're saying something brilliant, because the most important message that you can do is tell someone, I am invested in your success. When you tell someone, I'm invested in your success, you'll have loyalty for the rest of your life. It's to tell someone, oh, you're out or you're fired is easy, but it ends up costing you more money because it's training, it's looking, you have to hire someone to find someone. So at the end, it costs you more money. And if you come in and you say to someone, we believe in you, we know you can do this, but we're giving you some help, that's the most beautiful message that you can tell someone.
It really is. And you know, going back to Mike, I'm guessing there were tears. I'm just guessing. I'm guessing that he had to do, maybe they were private, maybe they were, you know, in a team meeting or two, but I'm guessing that once that this was kind of off of his conscience and he got, you know, out of the imposter syndrome that was clearly killing him, that he just kind of walked into his own genius.
Well, something about him happened, which I don't mention in the book. His wife was, they were going through a separation. And when he came clean with his wife, he said, I'm working with this woman. She's my coach. She asked me to come clean about something. And he told his wife. They became much closer. They're married now. They didn't get divorced. They didn't separate. So if you think about it, we not only saved his professional life, but we saved his personal life as well.
What a great story. I'm just sitting here mulling through the whole thing going, oh, my gosh. But it does make sense. I mean, when you're trying so hard to hide something, or you're just not being the authentic you, people really do pick up on that. At some level, I think we all pick up on people who are inauthentic or, you know, they really don't think they're supposed to be where they are. We kind of get it, and it can damage you.
Yeah, so the thing is, everybody has something to hide. It's what we do about it. The more you try to squish it, the more you try not to pay attention to it, the bigger it gets. And so the best thing you could do is hire a coach to really be honest with you. Now, this is very important to realize the difference. I hear coaches that come in and say, I'm going to fix my client. Those are not the kind of coaches that you want to hire, because a true coach doesn't fix anything. A true coach is the navigator who comes in and asks the question, the one important question, the two important questions, the three most important questions that get you to a point where you say, oh, yes, this is what's going on. So you want to find somebody who's very qualified as a coach that doesn't want to fix you, but wants to navigate through your life and through your leadership and your business in order to empower you, that you trust them enough, that you tell them what's going on, and then you work together as partners to work towards your greatness.
You know, Lolly, I almost always have a business coach, and I've had one or two that were just they wanted to tell me what to do, and I think you know enough about me. That doesn't work. Even my mother will tell you that doesn't work. But then I've had a couple that are just like, oh my gosh. I mean, they're almost like a therapist. They're almost like a counselor. I'm able to just lower my barriers, lower my guard, and go, okay, this is what is going on. And they're not judgmental. You know, they really want to help. They're not giving me a single solution, which the two coaches that were not so great, and I found they were fairly expensive, they would just say, okay, Denise, do this and do this. I'm like, what? Are you ordering me around? And it would turn out, honestly, and I would try to be fair about it, say, okay, well, I'm paying for this, and, you know, they've got a good reputation. I like them as a person. I will at least look at this solution. It was never the right solution for me or even the right suggestion for me. So I guess my real question here is, what do people look for in a coach? Do you have any, you know, solid advice on, you know, what people should look for and run away from in a coach?
Well, interestingly enough, today everybody seems to be a coach. When I first started out, you needed to be certified. You needed to go through the programs. You needed to go through the classes. One thing, Denise, which is very important for me, is that I'm constantly taking classes. I'm always immersed in being the student. So even though I'm the coach and I have been for many decades, I'm still not done. And that's another reason, you might not know this about me, Denise, but I read a book a day. I read a book a day because I want to be able to bring to my clients a new mythology, a new practice, a new process, a new way of thinking, a new attitude. And the way I keep on top of my game is, if I want to expand and grow and evolve, I need to have the student mindset. I need to have the curious and inquisitive mindset. And so find yourself a coach that doesn't think they are the expert, but they're partners with you. They're bringing things to you in a way of questions. They're empowering you instead of disempowering you. And I think a coach and a client, it has to be a very personal relationship that fits into your sweet spot. Some people like to be told, do this, do this, do this, and do this. That's not my thing. My thing is to ask the questions and to listen to the person and then to guide them towards where they need to go. The person that is in partnership with you should empower you and not disempower you. So the kind of coach that I would say you should be looking for is in your sweet spot and somebody that makes you feel good about who you are.
How do you interview a coach? I mean, look, you're right. There are so many coaches. It's almost like my industry is a web development industry and the virtual assistants industry. They are oversaturated. And as much as it pains me to say this, way too many people have no business doing what they're doing in those industries. They're just not educated enough. They're not trained enough. They just kind of hung out their shingle and off they go. It happens. I think it happens in every industry. And, you know, the coaching industry is way, way oversaturated. How, when you're going to a coach, what are maybe some of the best questions you should ask? And I know listening is a huge part of any relationship. You must be able to shut your mouth and listen. But are there any particular questions that you think people should be asking?
Are you asking that the person's asking the coach or the coach is asking the client?
If you're interviewing coaches, because look, it's a big investment in your time, in emotion, in how you're going to deal with your business, in money. It just seems to me like there are one or two pivotal questions that we should be asking of ourselves and of a potential coach. And I'm darned if I know what those questions are, to be honest.
Well, absolutely. The thing is that you have to see if there's synergy between the two of you. So the first thing I usually get asked is, what is your method? And do you guarantee results? I love this question. Do you guarantee results? And I go, no. And
seriously?
They go, what? They go, what? I go, well, I go, coaching is a partnership. So we have to make sure that, number one, we have some goals and objectives. And then we have to know that there's a two-party play, that I will bring the best of what I have to offer, which is the archetype of the inventor. Everything I do will be of excellence and integrity. But the person that I'm coaching, if it's not a two-way street, I won't be successful. And they go, wow, that's the first time I've ever heard a coach say that. And so, you know, to be authentic, not to promise something that you can't deliver on. So that's another thing. So I am very careful about what is my method? How do I do it? I don't promise anything I can't deliver on. And I always say I'm going to bring the best of what I have to offer. And I even tell them that I'm constantly learning, I'm constantly growing, and I'm going to bring them new methods and new mythology and new mindsets. And are they willing to go on the journey with me? Some people say no because it's too much work. They want a coach that will tell them the five steps, the five practices, the best procedures. And I'm not that coach. I won't be the good coach for them. So people, depends what you want. If you want a quick fix, you'll find the coaches that will fix you. But if you want a great coach, you'll find a navigator.
I love that. I mean, that absolutely clarifies that in my mind. And I'm going back to the navigator because you've mentioned it a couple of times, and I know they're smart and they're solutions oriented, but yeah, I think a lot of us in the audience are going, yeah, I'm the navigator. But you said something at the top of the show, you know, they're a fixer, they can be arrogant, they can offer single solutions. And I have to tell you, I catch myself wanting to go down that road every now and then because I know what I'm doing in terms of web development and social media, and I tend to just go, okay, do this. And I have to actually smack myself on the wrist and go, hang on, let's talk about this, and maybe I can offer you two or three different solutions, and you can pick the one you're comfortable with. I've had to train myself to sit down, slow down, and just not go, here, do this. Because, I mean, it's really in me to do that. And it's not a good thing. Well, I know this.
You didn't like it when your coach did it, so why would you do it to others?
Exactly. And that's where I learned it. So it's an expensive and very painful lesson, but I'm glad I learned it.
Right.
Okay, so let's go back to the book. Who inspired you to write this book? Because, you know, I know that it started out as one concept and then it went, you know, to a different one. But when you got down to the nitty-gritty and you started writing it, did you kind of go through your client list and pull out archetypes, or how did it happen? I'm curious to know how the whole process worked for you.
So the Rethink system started many years ago when I first started my coaching practice, and they were inspired by three mentors that I actually have never met. The first mentor is Viktor Frankl, the man who wrote The Man's Search for Meaning, Joseph Campbell, who wrote The Hero with a Thousand Faces, and it was Carl Gustav Jung who wrote The Undiscovered Self. These three mentors have taught me everything that I bring to my practice of coaching. So Viktor Frankl taught me that in every challenge, we have to find meaning. And most of my clients, they don't hire me because they're in a good space. They hire me because they're in a challenge. But we have to find meaning through the struggle, and I always find that really helps my clients. And it was Joseph Campbell who taught me that for every hero, all of us have a journey. We go through a journey in life. We go through things that we have to. We have dips and valleys in our life, and we have to go through them to be the person that we're meant to be. And it was Carl Gustav Jung that taught me that for every light, there is a shadow. And if you think about this way, if the sun is shining very bright, if there's greatness in the room, if there's greatness on the sidewalk, what do you see on the floor? You see a shadow. And we all have shadows. We all have parts of ourselves that are dark and that we have to own them to be a complete human being. And when all these three teachings came together, and I kept hearing people repeating, like, you know, hundreds and thousands of people repeating, I have self-doubt. I manipulate people when I'm not at my best. I withhold information. I cut corners. I'm self-serving. I started to create a system that everybody was saying that existed within them. And it didn't matter what country they were in. It didn't matter what language they were speaking. It didn't matter what gender. This goes across all levels of humanity. It's around the world. This is what everybody feels. And it kept popping up in my business. And I just started to create the system so people can find them in there. And that's how the system was created over three decades ago.
Well, it's a human condition. I mean, we all have light and dark, and I love that contrast and compare kind of thing. What happens when people finally get, you know, pretty honest with themselves? And I think you've described it, but if you have any other examples, you know, that when somebody just said, I'm not going to hide in my own shadow anymore. I'm going to bring this out. I'm going to be the best possible me I can be every day, every moment. One of my clients, Lala, he's been a client for a decade or better, he has always said, and this pops into my head all the time because it's just so true, you don't have to do quantum leaps. You don't have to be, you know, go from, you know, I'm kind of a crappy person, I'm going to be a great person, and I'm going to do it in the next 30 seconds. He says and has always said, if you strive to just be 1% better than you were yesterday, you know, think about the compound interest on that, which makes sense to me. Just strive to be better than you were 10 minutes ago, an hour ago, and that's how I operate. I just am constantly going, okay, what did I just do? Did that work? Maybe not, but I'm going to do better next time.
That's wonderful. One of the things I talk about in the book, there's a ritual actually that I go through when we have self-doubt, when we feel we're not the rebel who we need to be, who's competent and confident. The ritual that I have been doing for over 27 years starts with, I ask myself at the end of the day, what did you do that made an impact today? What did you do that made a difference today? What did you do well today? And I keep a tally in my mind about all the things that I've done well, because most of the time we spend our time in our shadow saying, I didn't do this great, I didn't do this well, I didn't, you know, you're always down on yourself. So I try to have enough in my mind, enough good positive things that I have done. And the second part of that ritual that I do every night is I ask myself a two-part question. What did you do today that was better than yesterday? And what can you do tomorrow that was better than today? And when I do that, this part ritual, what I'm doing is I am leveraging the imposter within me. I'm leveraging the parts of me that feel like I have self-doubt about who I am. And the only thing I'm doing is taking myself to the next level every single day. If I can improve every single day and who I was yesterday and who I'm going to be tomorrow, then we look back and we leave a wake of greatness. We leave a wave of success and impact and making a difference.
And you're also cueing your subconscious to say, you know what, I'm not going to beat myself up. I'm actually going to do better. Like I did, you know, the same thing for the longest kind of time. I don't sleep well. I never have. You know, it's just not something that's very important to me, and it's a struggle, to be honest. But every night when I would finally get myself talked into bed, I would lay there and go, oh, man, I forgot to do this. Or, oh, I should have done that. And I was beating myself up. Well, if for somebody who doesn't sleep well anyway, that just made it doubly more, you know, just more difficult. So I started doing kind of what you're doing. But I go one step further because I actually journal about it. At the end of the evening when I'm getting ready to go to bed, I have a digital journal. It lives on my computer because I can't write quick enough to get all my thoughts down on paper. And with this journal, I can actually do meta tags and I can, you know, type in words and I can find all the, you know, that word that was used in all these journal entries, you know, over the years. It's really neat. For a techie like me, it's really perfect. But I found that by, you know, keeping a little success journal every night, you know, I would, and I know you do this, you go, oh, I forgot about that, or you just glossed over it, or it wasn't important at the time, but hey, that was a big win. And once you start training your brain to really be excited about the things that you got done, not the things that you left behind, you wake up the next day with a whole different attitude, I find.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why the next ritual that I always do in the next morning is I wake up with gratitude. Before I start my day, I think of all the things that I'm grateful for. So it's almost like bookends to your day. You're grateful in the morning and it sets the mindset. And then you think about how you make an impact and how you can take yourself to the next level and make a difference. So these bookends of truly like, what is my purpose? What is my mission? How can I do the best of who? How can I be the best of who I am?
Exactly. And, you know, you're not beating yourself up because, look, and I've said this before on the radio, when we talk to ourselves sometimes, it's ugly. I mean, it can get so ugly. And I've often said if anybody, man or woman, spoke to me in a Walmart parking lot the way I speak to myself, I'd deck them. I would knock them clean into the dirt. Why do we do that to ourselves?
The truth is, we're more abusive to ourselves than anybody will ever be to us.
Very true. And I think that's so important to note, because if you do what you just talked about, your nighttime rituals and then your morning ritual of gratitude, you can kind of clean that attitude up.
Absolutely.
Which I think is brilliant. Okay, let's go back to the archetypes, because I am fascinated by these archetypes. Is there any particular one that you're finding is more prevalent than others, or people identify more than others?
And that's a great question. Most people will be thinking that, which archetype am I? But what makes this book so different
is... I'm thinking we're all of them, aren't we?
We're all of them, because the archetypes are about the virtues. It's about being confident and intuition and candor and courage, integrity, trust, and loyalty. We have these virtues within us, but we don't always embody them. And so this book gives you the message that at any given moment, in any circumstance, in every opportunity, you can ask yourself, do I want to stand in my greatness, or do I want to lead from my leadership gap? And you could make that choice. So I'm giving you more choices. I'm allowing you to have more control of your life. I'm telling you that every given moment you can be in your greatness, because you're going to choose which part of the archetype you want to be. And I'm also letting you know, and I'm giving you permission almost, that your strengths and your weaknesses must be integrated to be a whole human being. The message that we've been getting all these years is feed your strengths, feed your strengths. What are your strength finders? And that does a disservice to us, because the parts that we don't feel so good about ourselves, we tend to be shameful about it. Let's stop being ashamed. Let's stop hiding. Let's leverage those parts that we find that are weak to be a whole human being.
Can you give us some examples?
And examples of being a whole human being, or examples of what exactly?
Somebody who has basically just said, okay, I'm living in fear, I'm living in pain, I'm living in this. Can you give us some examples where, after they've gone through these archetypes and understood them and practiced, you know, some of the things in the book, how did they come out of that? How are they coming out of that?
So there are hundreds of stories in the book itself, but as a high level, and I don't know how much time we have, and I just want to honor the time, is that
we have 17 minutes, but I know we need to end a bit early, because you have a client call, so let's call it 13 or 14 minutes. We have plenty of time.
Okay, wonderful. So what's important to note is that we don't know ourselves that we are leading from our gaps. It's usually when we're feeling stuck, when we have a yearning feeling within us, when we have a longing feeling, when we're wondering and we're confused, why am I not reaching the level that I could be reaching? You have all these feelings within you, or if you find that you're diseased, right? You have some kind of disease and you don't know why you have it, or you're suffering from headaches, or you're just unhappy. Those are the telltale signs that you're leading from your gaps. Because when you're leading from your greatness, you feel more like you're in a flow. You feel more like things are on, right? When you're in a flow, things have synergy. Things are going right. When things start to break down, most of the times, if we're really honest with ourselves, it's our gap. The way I work with clients is, I've never had a client say to me, I'm in my gap. I'm in my leadership gap. You need to help me. I usually have people on the outside telling them, you need help. Things are not going right. And then they are honest enough, because they've been shameful about it. They say, yes, things aren't going right, but I don't know what it is. Most people feel ashamed of feeling stuck. Most people feel vulnerable when they're not reaching the heights that they know that they can, the potential that they can. So with most of my clients, when I start to work with them, I'm in a very peculiar situation, because they didn't hire me because they said, I'm unhappy. I got hired because someone said they're not doing well. And the way that most of my relationships work with, I have to gain the trust of those I work with. And so I usually start with, what do you want in life? What kind of legacy do you want to leave in life? And are you working towards that? And that's a way to unravel and to identify and bring awareness. It's almost like an unfolding that maybe you're not leading from your greatness yet, and maybe you're leading from your leadership gap, because if you're not doing today what you want to be remembered for tomorrow, most likely it's a gap. And so it reminds me of a yes?
No, I had a question about physical manifestations, but keep on going and I'll ask you in just a minute.
Story about one of my clients who had no clue of how he was coming across. And he's Oscar in the book. Oscar is a very smart man. He's very competent. He's great at what he does. But he's the kind of person that likes control in his life. And the way he likes control in his life is he likes to tell people what to do and how to do it. And Oscar tends to manipulate people and exploit people. So when we have our yearly leadership meeting where we bring together the board and we talk about what's the business for the upcoming year, usually it's Oscar telling people this is how we're going to do it. He unravels it. He brings it out on a whiteboard, says this is what we're going to do. This is how it's going to be done. Take it out to the rest of the organization. Yay! And you know
with
that.
No buy-in from the people in the room.
Right, excuse me. And it just alienates people. So one of these wonderful sessions, I saw the energy in the room. We were together. We usually do this for a week. We come together in the organization and we create the plan for the next year to see what we did last year with our targets, where we need to go for the year going forward. I said, Oscar, you know what? This isn't working. It's really not working. You think last year when you did this, it was working. It's not working now. Look at the faces of your leadership team. We need to change this up. And he's like, what do you think? What do you do? And he was like very upset. What do you want to do? I said, I would like for you to tell them when they come back in after the break that it isn't working for you and you'd like their input. He goes, why do I need their input? And I said, trust me on this. Let's try something new. Let's stop being the exploiter and the manipulator, and let's tell them something new. Let's see what happens. Will you try it? He goes, okay, let's try it. And so they all came back from the break, and they walked in, and they said, you know, everybody, I was talking to Oscar, and we feel that what we came up with isn't working. So we want to know what you think. And everybody looked at Oscar. And Oscar was like, yeah, it just doesn't feel right. And it was almost like giving them permission to talk. It was almost like giving them permission to voice what they needed to do. And guess what? It was almost like verbal diarrhea. Oh, this is what we could do. If we can get everybody included, if we can change this. And the room, so I went to the whiteboard, and I talk about this in the book, and then I had 3 days of work, and I just went and wiped the whole whiteboard clean. And everybody was like, oh. And then I said, let's go. What are you suggesting? And I started to really scribble feverishly on the board about all the suggestions. And I looked at Oscar like, don't speak, like be quiet. And everybody else was talking about what they feel and what they think. All of a sudden, we had a culture of intuitiveness instead of a culture of exploiting. And this became a game changer. We were exploring new things and using our intuitiveness of what works instead of leading from the exploiter who manipulates, what Oscar was doing. And it turns out, hence, 12 months later, that organization have surpassed their targets and they have surpassed their engagement survey. Now we're on target of when we get together in September again, we need Oscar to be quiet, and we need to rely on those that know what they're doing to speak up.
Is he on board with this?
Oh, he loved what happened last year because he has to work less.
Oh, good.
Right? He was working so hard because he thought he needed to do everything. And I said, look around the room. You have very qualified people. You hired them for a reason. Let them do their work. And the way people need, the way you are successful is you work smarter, not harder. And the way you can work smarter is to stop talking and to listen more.
Absolutely. So was it a struggle for him? I mean, I know you work with him closely. So was it a struggle for him to kind of rein that in? I mean, I guess my real question is, has it wrought any kind of personality changes in him?
So interestingly enough,
or does he really have to stomp on himself?
Interestingly enough, he's a work in progress. His default is to tell people always what to do. He's a control freak. But is he better? Yes. Is he still perfect? No. Will I get perfection? I don't think so. I'm not looking for that. But I'm looking for excellence. I'm looking for awareness. And I'm looking for him to be mindful. So if he catches himself, he makes a joke out of himself. He goes, if Lolly was here, what would she do now? She'd be like telling me to stop it. You know? So he has this banter now with his leadership team and his organization that he didn't have before. And he's less hard on himself. He's more inclusive. People like him where before they couldn't stand him. And so he's gotten better relationships. He has more engagement. He's reached his targets. He's made more money. He's happy, but he's still a work in progress, and he still has to tap in and ask himself all the time, am I standing in my greatness or am I leading from my gaps?
Well, I think, you know, that's, you know, tapping in, I think that's something we should all do all the time. You know, I don't think it's from listening to you and just from my own life experiences, I don't think that you get to that point and go, okay, I'm done, I'm fixed. I think it's a work in progress, like you just said.
Absolutely.
What I wanted to ask you earlier, Lolly, and we are going to run out of time because I want to be mindful of your time and your next appointment. I'm listening to you, you know, talk about this man. I think it was Mike who, you know, saved his business, saved his, you know, business reputation, saved his marriage, and Oscar. I'm wondering, just maybe off the top of your head, if you know, when these people are going through these kind of life-changing alterations in how they view the world, how they react to the world, how they interact with the world, are any of them getting healthier? Are they losing weight if they needed to? Are they walking taller? Are they feeling stronger? I would think that there would be a physical component to all this as well.
It has a real ripple effect, physical, emotionally, mentally, spiritually. It ripples out into every aspect of their lives. They're happier. They feel more fulfilled. They don't have to stuff their faces. They do things differently. They're smarter. They're more in sync. They're more in flow. Most of the time is they always thank me for getting back their life. Thank you for giving my life meaning. Thank you for putting me on a path of where I can see I'm making a difference. So it's a game changer. It's transformational, this work. It's truly transformational.
It would have to be. And, you know, I see a lot of people who try desperately to separate business from personal. I don't think you can do that. I just don't. What do you think?
No, there's no difference because we bring ourselves to work. There's a great psychologist. His name is David Cantor, and he talks about who's your family. And he wrote about, I think, the name of his book. And he says, we each bring our parents or our husband or our wives to work. We can't help it. We bring our family to work. And so he doesn't see it as a separation between personal and professional. And I don't either because we bring ourselves and we don't fragment ourselves.
Exactly. Well, listen, let's kind of wind this down a bit. Lolly, tell people where they can find you on the web, both your personal website. These are in the show notes, but people who are listening won't know that. So tell them where they can find you and, you know, all the great places that you are located.
So if you're interested in buying this book, you could go to theleadershipgapbook.com and pre-order the book. If you pre-order the book, you get a free assessment that most of my clients pay $97 for. And otherwise, you can find me at lollydaskal.com. I write for many publications. So if you Google Lolly Daskal and leadership, you'll see I'm in Harvard Business Review and Inc. and Forbes, Entrepreneur, Fast Company. I'm all over the place. So I live and breathe leadership, but I also live and breathe with the message that every single person has greatness within them. And if I can get people to believe that, my purpose, my mission, I've been successful.
That is an amazing message. And Lolly, thank you so much for being here today. I have really been looking forward to this interview, and I'm just so glad that we managed to get it together today. And as always, this hour went together. It went way, way, way too fast. And I really wish we had more time, but I thank you for all of the wonderful tips and the advice that you've shared with our audience. And I'm wishing you the absolute best with your book. I hope you make New York Times bestseller tomorrow.
Thank you.
So Listen, today's episode was sponsored by my company, Your Office on the Web. If you're looking for full-on business creation services such as web development, virtual assistants, online business management, social media marketing, and so much more, please visit yourofficeontheweb.com. And be sure to look for us in iTunes. Just look for Your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Lolly, thank you.
Thank you so much. This has been a pleasure and a privilege.
Thank you.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on Your Partner in Success Radio.